This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the St. Vitel Center Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheerboard. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive live here on TSN1290. Great atmosphere. Tons of people coming by, dropping off unwrapped toys for the Christmas Cheerboard, giving cash and credit card donations. It's a terrific atmosphere here. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's TSN's newest hockey analyst, Marty Biron. Marty, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I was not going to say no to a show with that name, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I was going to say yes. If it was the middle of the night, I just love the name of it.
We appreciate that, Marty. Thanks very much for that. Marty, we got to start in New York City. You obviously played a number of years with Henrik Lundqvist in New York. He signed his big contract extension earlier this week with the Rangers, keeping him as a blue shirt probably for his entire career. What was your initial thought upon hearing about his new contract?
Well, I was glad that it was done because I know Henrik is a very intense, very serious guy, and I've been with him for 4 years. I kind of brought in the fun, relaxed side of him a little bit up. I tried to help him. I tried to joke around sometimes after games where he was not happy with himself and tried to light it up for him a little bit. But I know that this was weighed on him. I know that it was talked about in camp and at the beginning of the season. And it's a tough distraction as a goalie to deal with. I talked to him last night, and I even tried to get something out of him, a joke out of him. I said I was going to send him my Christmas list, and my wife and kids wanted to send him their Christmas list and all that, and he wasn't biting. I mean, that was definitely the thing that he was serious about, that he was worried about, and he's completely relieved that this is done.
Yeah, Marty is obviously one of the funnier guys in the National Hockey League, so if you haven't had a chance to listen, obviously this interview will be a nice primer. Marty, you know, in terms of Henrik Lundqvist, you know, he's been obviously so good for so long, but you've seen him on a day-to-day basis. What makes him so good?
Well, like I said, he's intense, he's focused, his preparation is second to none. The partnership he has with Benny Allaire, the goalie coach in New York, obviously a lot of people have known Francois Allaire, his brother, from starting that butterfly style a little bit with Patrick Roy in the 90s, and then went on to coach Jean-Sébastien Giguère in Anaheim, and now he's back in Colorado with Patrick and Jiggy. I mean, those two brothers have developed such a style, and what amazes me is that the way Henrik plays, he'll be able to play for many, many years. He's very, very careful about how he treats his body. He's not a goalie that's a little bit like Dominik Hasek I played with, very flexible, very all over the place. Henrik really controls his the amount of effort he spends on the ice, the amount of things he does. He's very concerned about how his body will take the wear and tear, and he's proactive about it. And so to me, 7-year contract, he'll still be playing as well in 7 years as he is now because of the way he plays.
Marty, we wanted to, before we get to other teams in the NHL and talking about other players, we wanted to talk to you about some of the other coaches and players that you've played with. You obviously played under John Tortorella, and we know about the John Tortorella is in Vancouver now. We wanted to ask you about, what was he like as a head coach? And by the end of his tenure, do you think that a lot of talk was made about this, but do you think he lost the confidence in the room by the end of his tenure in New York?
I think it was unfortunate that we had a shortened season last year, and Torts wasn't able to set his standard and his system from training camp. He's a guy that likes to get the guys together in training camp, gets to their fitness testing is very important to him. The fitness or the shape you're in during practice is very important, and he didn't get to do that. So then it started to slip, and for him, as soon as it started to slip, he became a little bit angry at guys for maybe not being in shape and not being the way he wanted them. And obviously you look at some of the guys that got let go last year in the NHL, the type of coaches. Lindy Ruff, I played under Lindy Ruff in Buffalo. Very intense, very hard coach to play for. But again, shortened season, the message wasn't getting through. He's fired. Laviolette now in Philly at the beginning of the season after a tough year last year and a tough start. Kind of the same deal. And Lavi is an intense coach. And then Torts last year, Vigneault could fall in the same category a little bit. Those coaches really took it hard that they didn't have 82 games and a full training camp to get their players ready.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the St. Vitale Centre Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheerboard. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. We're joined by Marty Biron, TSN hockey analyst. Marty, you mentioned Ryan Miller, and you mentioned your time in Buffalo. You played with Miller there. You know, there's talk now that he might not explore free agency, that maybe he would be willing to sign a contract extension with the Sabres before he becomes an unrestricted free agent this offseason. If you were Ryan Miller, would you re-sign in Buffalo or would you explore the free agent market?
I would definitely re-sign in Buffalo if I was Ryan Miller, just because I think the fans, the organization, the direction this organization is going to take in the months to come, in the year to come, is going to be a drastic change for where it's been. And obviously for Ryan, he got to taste of that success when he came out of the lockout, and he, you know, you go to back-to-back conference final mm-hmm. with players like Briere and Drury and all the leadership that was on that team, and then it's been slipping, and now Vanek is gone, and his good friend Pomenzo is gone, and Paul Gostad is gone, Derek Roy is gone. These are all players that were part of that group, so it's hard for him to see where he would fit moving forward, but I think that if I was in his shoes, knowing what I didn't know then and some of the situation that I lived through Buffalo and Philadelphia, I would say the grass isn't greener on the other side. You know, that's the old saying, but it's true. You're comfortable here. You know the team. You know the players. Try to work it internally as opposed to try to go somewhere else. Now, there's another factor, obviously, is his wife now is, you know, in L.A. He's here. And I lived that with my family the last few years, just being in New York City and my family in Buffalo. It's not easy to live, you know, two separate lives when you want to move forward in your personal life as well. So that might be a factor, and we'll just have to wait and see.
You know, on that point though, Marty, you know, how does he fix that situation? Because I mean, the Quick's in LA, Niemi's in San Jose, Anaheim has four goaltenders who could probably start for them. Phoenix, close to the area, has Mike Smith. Like, is it going to be at some point, you know, one of those two is going to have to pick where they're going to live and then settle down that way?
Maybe, but again, you don't play hockey forever. I mean, Ryan's got maybe another 6-7 years of hockey and maybe another contract, and then that might be it. So, you know, you look at it as making a sacrifice now and then maybe mm-hmm. enjoying life after that. I talked to him the other day. The Rangers were in town, and I went to the morning skate, and I talked to him. He said this year's been better because his wife got to spend long period of time here in Buffalo. She was here for a month early in the season, so it's been better, but it's not the ideal situation, that's for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. In terms of Buffalo, sticking with Buffalo for a second, and you know, when you came into the league, Marty, Ted Nolan was coach of the Sabres, if I recall correctly, and you played for him, and you know, he went from Buffalo to the Islanders, and then he has been coach for a while. He was overseas, and you're residing in Buffalo now. What was he like to play for then, and do you think it's similar now?
I think it's very similar. I think he learned a lot. He would maybe a little bit more green and raw as a coach when I was here in Buffalo, but I loved him. Everybody did. You know, funny enough, I was just an 18-year-old kid. I came up, and we played in the Montreal Forum against the Canadiens a few weeks before they closed down the Forum. And, I mean, grew up in Quebec City. He gave me an opportunity to play an NHL game there, which I never thought I would do. But I came in relief for John Blue, and then I got pulled later in the second period for John Blue again. I was a nervous wreck. I mean, you could just see me shaking in my gear. So, but I'm sitting on the bench. And then there was a reporter there for Hockey Night. They were doing the game. It was a Saturday night. And he said, hey, can we interview Marty on the bench right here? And said, well, listen, sure, let him enjoy it. And all the guys, I remember Patty LaFontaine and Randy Burge and Diesel, you know, these veterans, they looked down the bench, me doing a live interview during the game for the TV station that you never see that. You know, now you see the interviews on the bench and the coaches being interviewed. In 95, you would never see that. And, mm-hmm. you know, he obviously gave me that opportunity. And I saw him again during that morning skate last week. And he saw me, came over, gave me a big hug. It was funny. He's just a very lovable guy. And I think this is going to be a good thing for the players, especially to have that kind of guy behind the bench.
Marty, before you came on, we were going through the entire NHL and kind of doing a bit of an exercise comparing the Winnipeg Jets' current goaltenders versus other teams. We got to the Philadelphia Flyers, and right this year, Steve Mason and Ray Emery have done a pretty good job there. For people that don't remember, Marty was an excellent goaltender when he played. Well, you were an excellent goaltender whenever you played. But for the Philadelphia Flyers during the 2007-2008 season, you were the number one goaltender there, and you took the Flyers to the Eastern Conference Finals. Eventually, Pittsburgh lost in the Stanley Cup Finals to the Detroit Red Wings. But in your opinion, having played in Philadelphia, is it different playing in Philadelphia than other cities in the NHL?
Every city is different in some level, but I love playing in Philly. My first year was so much fun. The team was a bunch of veteran guys, that Jason Smith and Darren Hatcher, and you know, the Kimmo Timonen and Briere and Simon Gagné. Those guys all came in. Mike Knubel. It was a great locker room. It was a great place to be. And to kind of compare my situation a little bit with what Lundqvist might have lived in the first month is, after we lost in the conference final, Paul Holmgren told me, you know, Marty, it's not a matter of if we sign you to an extension, it's a matter of when we'll work on it. And then the whole summer went by, no contract. No train trip went by, no contract. Christmas went by, no contract. And now season's over and there's no extension. And I didn't want to allow it to be a distraction, but it did. And it's really hard as a goalie to focus on the future when you don't know what it's going to be and when there's that little voice in your head. So I felt for Henrik Lundqvist that he had to deal with that in the beginning of the year, because I lived it for a whole season. That's not easy. So my second year wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. I wish I would have had the chance to continue in Philly, because I really liked it there. Unfortunately, it didn't end the way I wanted.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're live at the St. Vitale Centre Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheerboard. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive.
Marty, you know, you play in the past couple of years with the Rangers, and you look across the ice, and the goaltender of the Winnipeg Jets, Andre Pavlik, he gets, there's two different positions there in Winnipeg. You know, either he is a starter 100%, he's a guy who can be trusted. The other guys say, well, not so sure. You know, he really, for a prolonged period of time, hasn't really established himself as that upper echelon guy. When you look across the ice, what did you see about the strengths of his games and maybe the weaknesses of his game?
See, when I first played against Pavlik, and when he first started to come in the scene in Atlanta and then to Winnipeg, I thought he was very raw. He had great abilities. He was quick. He was covering a lot of the net, but some games he would be all over the place. And to me, it felt like you needed somebody to be able to give him some parameters and say, you have to play within this box and control how you play. But then we had a few discussions with Benny Allaire in New York about certain players around the league, and me and Benny used to talk about goalies all the time. And he brought up the fact that he thought Pavlik was one of the best goalie in the league ability-wise. Like, his glove hand is amazing, his reflexes are great, his speed is, you know, nobody can match it. And I started to look at him a little bit more and a little bit more in depth, and I really liked his game. You know, unfortunately, some nights he's kind of left alone there to try to save the game, and it doesn't happen. But I still think that he's building up to where he needs to be. Now it's a matter of if he's going to run out of time, or if the team's going to, like, say, okay, we're going a different direction. But I really think that he could be that, you know, top-tier goalie in the league. And he's not. He's kind of knocking on the door right now.
You know, on the point of the team, and I agree with you in terms of the performance in front of him sometimes, there's a lot of defensive breakdowns. When you played in the league and you were playing against the Jets the past 2.5 years, what was the scouting report about the Jets? Like, what does the other team try and do to Winnipeg? And what are maybe the strengths and weaknesses from another player's perspective?
Well, I think they were a team that had a lot of defense join the rush, and you know, Bufflin is one of them. But if you can just play simple at your own blue line in the neutral zone, kind of stuff them up there, and then they're going to take chances. They're going to join the rush, and then you're going to get your on-man rushes. All you have to do is buy time, wait a little bit. You know, especially on the road. I played a few games in Winnipeg because I only played the road games. I never played at MSG, so I would always play on the road, and Winnipeg was my spot. But, you know, it was always like, okay, the first 10 minutes, don't turn the puck over, don't do anything crazy. Just buy some time because you're going to frustrate them. They're going to take more chances, and then you're going to get your opportunity. And we did that, and we were very successful against Winnipeg. And, you know, I remember even one day I got the flu. I didn't get to start against Winnipeg, and Lovquist got the start, and we won 4-0. And I was mad because I was like, this is a game I should have been playing because I used to love playing against Winnipeg, and the team loved playing against Winnipeg. So it was one of those things that we had a good feeling, the Rangers, and maybe other teams don't. But you know how the matchups sometimes are in your favor.
Yeah.
And for the Rangers, Winnipeg was a team that was kind of circled on the calendar that we knew we were going to play well again.
Marty, we'll let you go on this last question. And really, this entire year is sort of divided. At least this entire NHL season is divided into two parts. The part leading up to the Sochi Olympics and then the part after the Sochi Olympics. Who better to ask than a great former goaltender like yourself? Who do you think should be the starting goaltender for Team Canada in Sochi?
Well, I've answered that question many, many times and for the last 2 months, and I said Mike Smith should be the starter, and it's because I think he's a very underrated goalie, and we don't get to see him a lot out east, and you guys are kind of like moving out to the west now, so you'll see him a lot more, but I think he's a very big goalie, plays deeper in his net, and for me, to go to the big ice surface in Russia this year is going to be an adjustment for some goalies. Carey Price, everybody seems 99% of the people in the league, the players I talk to, coaches, media people, think he should be the number one goalie. And I think he's very good, and he could be up there. But I think it's going to be an adjustment. Canada's not done well on big ice in, you know, in Nagano and Torino. And now I think you have to think outside of the box on this one and possibly let him, you know, go in there and see what he can do. Sean Burke always did well on big ice surface, and he's the goalie coach in Phoenix. He will kind of give him some pointer and really help him get the solid performance that Team Canada needs. But I think that should be him. But obviously, I think the play of Carey Price lately has been really good, so he's making a case for himself, especially in my view. But I'll still stick to my guns, what I said a couple months ago, and I think Mike Smith gives Canada the best chance to win and go.
Marty Biron is a TSN hockey analyst. He was a former goalie in the NHL for a countless number of years. Marty, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We really appreciate your insight.
And anytime. And next time I want you guys to change it to too big of pads or 13-inch pads or something like that. Yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah, Marty, we'll change the name of the show maybe to Trapezoid.
Trapezoid would be pretty good, too. Get rid of that one, too.
Thank you, Marty. Take care.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Let's go to break. We're live at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. We're in support of the Christmas Cheerboard. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here at St. Vitale Center Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheerboard. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to the to TD Canada Trust for their support, their volunteers, everything related to the Christmas miracle here. Wouldn't be able to do it without all the volunteers. So TD Canada Trust helped with that. A bunch of volunteers that are manning the donation table here at St. Vitale Center, St. Vitale Food Hall. So appreciate that to all of our supporters for this fine event that we put on a yearly basis here. Marty Biron just absolutely nails there.
Marty Biron, I think, and he's done analysis for TSN before, but he obviously announced his retirement from the NHL this year from the New York Rangers. But when he's done analysis, he's just a great guy, great addition for hockey media, because that guy loves the game. You can hear the passion in him. He was an excellent goaltender, guys. We talked about when we took Philly to the Eastern Conference Finals. People remember him more as a backup. But he was a number one goaltender, too, in the NHL. But, yeah, awesome interview.
What happened with Biron is he came up behind Hasek and then...
In Buffalo.
And then Miller came through. And so he was behind two incredible netminders. You know, Hasek's a surefire Hall of Famer. Yeah. And then, the next question is whether Miller will be in. Time will tell on that one. But maybe he had come up different organization. Maybe he would have been a starter for, 15 years.
So. Sure, absolutely.
Great interview.
Let's continue with our evaluation of goaltenders. We'll do this quickly before we're going to bring in Pat Hickey at the top of the hour from the Montreal Gazette to talk about the Habs. The Chicago Blackhawks, you have them as better than the Winnipeg Jets. On a different team, what kind of goalie is Corey Crawford?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I think he's improved a lot. coaching-wise, you know, in terms of how he's – we talked about Stephon Waite, and we're going to talk about Stephon Waite, the new goalie coach of Montreal, and what the effect he had on Corey Crawford. But, you know, Corey Crawford, Drew, as poor as he was the season prior against Phoenix in the first round, and it probably cost them that series, he was just great last year, solid this year. He's he's worked on his glove hand. I think overall, I realize that he plays in front of such a good team in Chicago, and you could argue that it's more in the similar, but he got a cup there. He's been established. He's better. I mean, I think he's just been better.
Has he?
And Corey Crawford, guys, last year, that was the big concern, right? And, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I did pick the Hawks to win the cup, and I had some concerns that Corey Crawford might have some issues because of a couple of years ago when the Hawks mm-hmm. lost out before ever getting close to the Stanley Cup Finals, right? But Corey Crawford has proven he's a legitimate number one goaltender, and he was excellent in the playoffs. And, Richie, he plays in front of a world-class defense. Mm-hmm. Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Jarmolson, Oduya Leddy. I mean, you're talking a top five, maybe top three defense. But Corey Crawford, just on his own merits, is an excellent goaltender. So I would give, you know, them a slight edge over the Winnipeg Jets because I think Corey Crawford is right now a better goaltender than Pavlik. Not by, you know, a mile. But and I probably would have had more concerns about Nikolai Habibulin, but they've brought in Antti Raanta.
Yeah.
He's a guy that...
Played solid last night.
A goalie from Finland. So I'll give the edge to the Hawks, and I don't think it's as big of a question mark for that team as it was in previous years, because Crawford's proven he can do it. He's won the cup.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette is going to join us. We'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens, 8-1-1 in their last 10, mm-hmm. and we'll continue with these goaltending rankings in the final hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the St. Vitale Centre Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheerboard. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our good friend from the Montreal Gazette. He covers the Montreal Canadiens, Pat Hickey. Pat, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good afternoon. Always my pleasure, guys.
Pat, you look at the Montreal Canadiens, and you look at them, you know, right up at the top there of the Eastern Conference and of the Northeast Division, 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. Why are the Canadiens playing so well right now?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One, they're getting outstanding goaltending from both goaltenders. I think they're number two in the league behind Boston in goals against average. Carey Price is having an incredible season. His win-loss record isn't that great. I think he's at 13-8-2. But a lot of those losses came early in the season when they weren't getting a lot of goal support for him. But his goals against average just a shade under two. Peter Budaj 5-1-1 with a 180 goals against average. Both guys up around 934, 935 in save percentage. So that's been outstanding. The thing that's made this last nine games, they're 8-0-1, no regulation losses in their last nine games. And there are two things that happened. One, Alexei Yemelin came back, missed 5 or 6 months with a rehabbing from a very serious knee operation towards ACL and his MCL. But he's back in the lineup, and Brandon Prust came back from an injury. Two key components in the defensive side of this game.
You know, Pat, you mentioned Alexei Yemelin. What makes him so good?
Well, first of all, he's responsible defensively. He doesn't make too many mistakes out there. The other thing is he's a physical defenseman. You know, you look at the Yemelin and Markov, they'll be the number one defense pair for Russia at the Olympics. Both guys have been the outstanding player in the Russian League, in Markov's case, the old Russian League, and then in Yemelin's case, the KHL.
Right.
So these guys are elite, world-class defensemen, and Yemelin doesn't have quite the offensive capabilities that Markov has, but he's very solid defensively, blocks shots, and hits people. One of the hits last year on Milan Lucic led to that injury. But his first game back, he had a very similar situation along the boards, made the hit, And he's just playing with more and more confidence every game.
Pat, it's hard to believe this because it feels like P.K. Subban just signed a contract, but at the end of this season, he will be a free agent. Can you give us any update on those negotiations, and do you think that the Montreal Canadiens will re-sign P.K. Subban before this summer?
They'll re-sign him. I don't know whether it'll be before the summer. Negotiations are ongoing right now. I think that it's in everybody's best interest. It may not be in PK's best interest, but certainly in Canadians' best interest to get it done, because then they have to make other decisions. Andre Markov is also unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. Now, Markov's getting on in years, but you'd never know it by the way he's playing out there. He's playing some of his best hockey of his career. He had a knee injury a couple of years ago. We also had a cut leg, tore some ligaments in his leg. But, you know, you look at where he is now, and he's playing as well as he's played at any time in his career. They're going to have to make a decision on him. Obviously, it won't be the same long-term contract that PK is going to get, because in another couple of weeks, you know, Andre will be 35 years old. And, you know, but he's always been very easy to deal with in the past. One of the interesting things is that he used to be represented by Donnie Meehan, who also represents Rafael Diaz, whose contract is coming up, and Subban, but he's since left Meehan, and I wouldn't be surprised if he negotiates his own contract.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're live at the St. Vitale Centre Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheerboard. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. We're joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette talking about the Montreal Canadiens. Pat, I mean, it seems hard to believe that this is really even a conversation, but you've just heard it so very many times that, you know, P.K. Subban might not be, you know, on the Team Canada. He might not make the Canadian Olympic team in Sochi. Do you believe that will actually happen, or do you have P.K. Subban as one of Canada's defensemen in Sochi, Russia?
Well, I have him as one of their defensemen. I don't know whether Steve Yzerman does, though. You know, there's still this belief that P.K. can make a mistake that will be costly to you. We saw it the other night when they were playing New Jersey. He coughed up the puck late in the game. Patrick Elias scored to give them a 3-2 lead with a little over a minute to go. The Canadiens came back and tied the game and went on to win in a shootout. But there's always that high-risk, high-reward tag that's attached to PK. I wrote a story this morning. If you look at, this is not plus-minus, but on goals, you know, that a team, when a team is on the ice, the goals that a player is on the ice for. Mm-hmm. And I think the Canadiens, the number one leader in the league is Sidney Crosby, followed by Andre Markov, followed by P.K. Subban. Markov and Subban have been on the ice for 55 of the Canadiens' goals, and they've scored, I think, 82.
Wow.
So they've, you know, made a major contribution to the offense, and they've only been on for 25 goals. So, you know, this is a situation where, you know, these guys are well ahead in terms of the production. They do more good things than they do bad things.
It certainly does. And you talked earlier in the interview, Pat, about the goaltending and Carey Price. So sticking with the Olympics, do you think that, I mean, I think we can assume, well, I'm not entirely assuming, but most people think that Price will be on the team. I guess the question is, if he is on the team, do you think he'll be the starter?
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think he was number one going into the season, even though he's coming off a bad season last year. Mm-hmm. I think he's the guy they pegged their hopes on, and it was his job to lose. And he certainly hasn't done anything to lose it. He's turned his game around. 2 years ago, this guy was in the top 10 in every goaltending category in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And he had a bad end to last season. He had a pretty good start. And then at the end, he seemed to lose his confidence. He lost his focus. His technique was off. During the offseason, they brought in Stefan Waite, a longtime goaltending coach. This is the guy that developed Antti Niemi in Chicago, and then Corey Crawford. Both guys won Stanley Cups with a lot of help from Stefan Waite as a coach. And Waite has got him back on track. You look at him now, and he's doing all the good things he's always done, but he's not doing any of the bad things. He's a little quicker. He's a little lighter on his feet. And he's just having a tremendous season. The other guy, Peter Budaj, will also be going to the Olympics. And right now, I think he's penciled in as Yaroslav Halak's backup for Slovakia. But I wouldn't be surprised if he sees some action in Sochi because he's playing well. He's actually got better numbers than Halak does on a team that doesn't, you know, you expect a goaltender in St. Louis to have good numbers because of Hitchcock system.
Right.
And, you know, Canadians are a little different. You know, they score more goals than, you know, than some teams you think of as the purely defensive teams.
Pat, another guy that we wanted to ask you about is David Desharnais. He's really had some problems in Montreal this year. He found himself a healthy scratch on the bottom lines there. Yeah. Started to turn his game around a little bit. What is your assessment of David Desharnais? Is he a guy that is starting to play a little bit better and starting to get Michel Therrien's trust back?
Well, again, during this little stretch here where, you know, they've gone without a regulation loss, he's better than a point a game. He's turned his game around quite a bit. It's interesting. He never got down on himself, even though he was a healthy stretch twice. He always had confidence that, you know, things would come around for him. He said, yeah, I've had some bad games, but, you know, you're in a situation where, you know, I played 200 games in my career. I've had 20 bad ones. And he said he'd stack that record up against anybody, you know, that they're, you know, you're going to have off nights. You're going to have bad games. His size is always going to be a problem. He's not very big, but he's starting to play. He's a very strong player. He's good along the boards, and he's starting to play, you know, with more of the confidence that he had 2 years ago when he played with Eric Cole and Max Pacioretty. He's been playing with Pacioretty since they were in the minors. One of the things that's helped them in this most recent resurgence is they put Brendan Gallagher on that line. And even though Gallagher is a small guy, he doesn't play like a small guy. He's a big guy in the terms of what he does, where he goes into the dirty areas, and winning battles along the board, controlling the pucks. And he's helped Desharnais amazingly.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're live at the St. Vitale Centre Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheer Board, and we're joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette.
You know, Pat, the Habs have been coming at teams with a real balanced attack, but one player, he's had some injury troubles and in the past as well. Max Pacioretty, if he were to play a full season right now, he'd be on pace for about 40 goals. Has he really taken the next step in terms of his maturation?
Yeah, I think he has. You know, I mean, Max has always been a guy who scores in bunches. And I think he's got 9 goals, I think, in the last 7 games. But he's had a 3-goal game in there, a couple of 2-goal games, and a 1-goal game. All those goals have come at home, which is just, he says it's just the way the schedule is broken. But, you know, he wants to be able to produce a little more on the road. But after a very slow start where he was doubting himself, and he had a 2-goal game, and then he just took off from there. And he's a big, strong forward. He's a guy who will probably go to Sochi as part of the Team USA, although a couple of weeks ago you would have said his chances were very slim and that Alex Galchenyuk was ahead of him in the selection order for the U.S. team. But now both guys might go, although Galchenyuk's been struggling a little bit of late. Again, you know, he was playing with Lars Eller and Brendan Gallagher. You took Gallagher off that line. It's not quite the same line. Gallagher, 2 years ago in training camp, when he didn't make the team, the thing that impressed the coaches was he made the players around him look better in every game he played. And that is carrying over into his NHL career.
Pat, we'll let you go on this last question. When the Habs played the Senators last year in the playoffs, you know, we really do remember how physical the Senators were with them and how the Habs were sort of beat up by the Senators and didn't really have an answer to their physicality. It seems so far this year, though, the Habs are playing a more physical style earlier in the season. Has this been a point of emphasis for the Habs this season, sort of to prepare themselves for the grittiness of the playoffs?
Well, I think it's one of those things that they addressed during the offseason. They brought George Parros in, even though he's more of a deterrent than anything else. He hasn't played that many games. They got Douglas Murray, who's a slow but very effective defenseman. You know, got lots of size, blocks shots, hits people. And I think getting Yemlin back. Yemlin was not around for the playoffs last year, got injured in April and missed the last 20 games or so of the season. And so all those factors have made them a little bit a little bit bigger, a little more physical. This is a team that's still in transition. They still have a lot of small guys, but that will change as the years go on. I think they have a chance at the end of this year. They've got some guys, Brian Gianta, the captain, you know, having a pretty good year, but he'll probably be gone. Francis Bouillon is at the end of his career. He's 38 years old. And they'll replace these guys with a little more size. And they've got two big defensemen in the American Hockey League, in Jared Tenorti and Nathan Beaulieu, who will be making the move up.
Pat Hickey covers the Montreal Canadiens for the Montreal Gazette. He's a frequent guest on this program, and he always brings the goods. Pat Hickey, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Take care, Pat. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're down at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. Come say hello. Bring a gift, an unwrapped toy, a cash donation.
Food.
It's all in support of the Christmas cheer board.
We'll take food.
Here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Chill Bar and Grill, Illegal Curve official away game headquarters, located right at Confusion Corner, 423 McMillan Avenue. We are there for every away game. HD TVs everywhere, so you'll never miss a minute of the action. Great food, great beverages, and as you hear in the fine commercial that Ezzy and Richard put together.
I'm using the word fine a lot today, Drew.
Well, it's good. I like the word fine. It's a good commercial.
I'm going to fine you for using the word fine.
Touché,
too often.
That commercial, how about this? That commercial is great. Is that better?
Thank you.
Okay, there you go. I do really enjoy that commercial.
It's our commercial debut. Ezzy helped to write the script.
Yeah, I wrote the script. It was with crayons, but I still wrote the script. Yeah,
it was actually with it.
And spelling mistakes everywhere.
It was with mayo out of the bottle.
Well, it was from the Cheers, so chill.
Yeah. Chill Bar and Grill, Illegal Curve away game headquarters. You can check them out online at chillbar.ca. Gentlemen, let's wrap up our goaltending rankings. We left off with the Dallas Stars, and of course their starting goaltender is Kari Lehtinen, formerly of the Atlanta Thrashers. So, in the way back machine, you suppose that Kari Lehtinen could have been the starting goaltender here for the Winnipeg Jets. You have him as being a better goaltender than Andre Pavlik, the Stars' goaltending depth as being better than that of the Winnipeg Jets.
You got Jack Campbell there too, but Kari Lehtinen's better than Pavlik. I think it's open and shut. I really don't think it's close. I think the Thrashers organization chose the wrong netminder, and that's not a slight to Pavlik as much as it is how highly I think of Kari Lehtinen, staying healthier now than he did in the past, supremely talented netminder. And if he didn't play in Dallas, you'd be hearing a heck of a lot more about him.
Yeah, I think that really boils down to it, is the fact that in Dallas, I mean, nobody pays attention to the Dallas Stars unless they're atop the NHL or something along those lines.
Yeah, Drew, Richie mentioned the injury problems that Kari Lehtinen's had. But, when you're a first overall pick, Rich, and we've seen this time and time again, look at Rick DiPietro, Marc-Andre Fleury, goaltenders aren't picked first overall. This guy was heavily scouted and has unbelievable talent.
Oh, yeah.
You look at his numbers, .930 save percentage. The Stars are playing the Philadelphia Flyers this afternoon, tied up at 1. He's playing well again tonight. I'm just following this on Twitter, watching a little bit on Game Center. But Kari Lehtinen, we've seen him here. The Stars have beaten the Jets already once this year. He's a world-class goaltender, and I think people have forgotten about him a little bit because of his struggles in Atlanta. And you mentioned Jack Campbell, a guy that played for the Canadian World Junior team. So
U.S.
U.S. So we'll go back to the Jets being a little bit slightly less deep in goal than the Stars.
The Detroit Red Wings, Jimmy Howard is backstopping that team. You have them. Is that a function of the team itself, or is Jimmy Howard proven enough to you that he's a better goaltender than Andre Pavlik?
Yeah, you probably hear some people differing on that. I think significant majority take Howard. 3 years ago, a little bit less certain. Howard has, I think, developed into a better netminder. I think that's one of the situations where a coach and he's been coached and he's played better. And the Wings aren't as good as they used to be, Drew.
Right.
And Howard's had struggles at times, but the season and such, but I think overall, I think Howard's a better netminder. I think Detroit is a better netminding depth.
Yeah, that one for me is a little bit tough. I really like Jimmy Howard, and then you throw in Jonas Gustafsson, who he's relieved Jimmy Howard a little bit, but for me, Howard is still, when you compare him to Andre Pavlik, I think he's He's in the same range, kind of in the a middle goaltender, but he's been better at times. When he was here in Winnipeg, he was excellent. So I'd probably give the edge to the Detroit Red Wings organizationally, but Gustafson is a guy that the Jets passed on. So I think
he passed on them. They traded for his rights and they couldn't sign him.
Well, either way, they didn't go out of their way to sign him. So I'll probably go with the Red Wings, but not that far ahead of the Jets.
The next two teams, I think, probably won't elicit a ton of discussion. That's being the Los Angeles Kings and the Montreal Canadiens.
No.
Anybody have any quibbles with saying that those two teams?
Well, you wouldn't, but you might have a little bit of an issue with Ben Scrivens. Ben Scrivens has been excellent in relief of Jonathan Quick.
Yeah, he's been great.
So Jonathan Quick alone is a better goaltender than, you know, almost every goaltender in the NHL, Andre Pavlik included. So you got to give him the benefit of the doubt there and give LA the edge.
Nashville too, Drew.
Nashville Predators, even with Pekarinen's health issues.
Mazanek's been great too.
They always
seem to have somebody in the pipeline, Richie.
Yeah, exactly. And Rene, you know, you're hoping he's going to be back in the next 2 months or so. So
yeah.
Okay, New Jersey Devils.
Back.
Marty Brodeur and Corey Schneider.
Really Schneider's a better netminder.
It's really tough when you have, in my opinion, the best goaltender of all time, and then you throw in Corey Schneider, who right now, because Marty has actually surprised a lot of people and played more games, he's not playing as much. But Corey Schneider is excellent. We know how good he is. When he played with the Manitoba Moose, he took them all the way to the Calder Cup Finals. He was excellent in Vancouver. His numbers were already great. We don't have to talk about this. We already know what happened with Luongo, and he split time there and everything like that. So I'd give the edge to the Devils like Richie did.
Rangers, obviously, Lundqvist. Skip over that one. Not much of a discussion there.
Yep.
Ottawa Senators. Is this ranking based on Craig Anderson, or is it based more on Robin Lehner?
Both. Because you could argue that either one of them are better than Pavlik. I think you could argue, Anderson probably gets the edge. You still want to see more from Leonard, but Leonard is from the future. I still think it's very talented. I think him and Pavlik, in terms of their talent level, people probably talk a lot about their talent level. It's a matter of refining it. I think Leonard's a little more of a hothead, too, which is an issue. But overall, depth in Ottawa had Bishop last year, too. I think Ottawa takes this one. I don't think it's by the margin of Henrik Lundqvist, but I think they take it.
Yeah, Richie, I'd probably say that the Ottawa Senators have the edge in goal there. I've said this on the NHL Midweek Show, which we do on Wednesdays. I think Robin Leonard's the better goaltender, and I think he's proving that. The guy's got tremendous athleticism. Mm-hmm. He's a big guy. And you mentioned he's a hothead. Sure, I don't mind that a little bit.
That's fine. Yeah, so is Rask.
That might be an issue when you have... The problem, as we know, when you're a hothead, then you kind of have those ups and downs, and sometimes it can be to your detriment as well as being something that you can build off
of. Tim Thomas's Rask.
Right,
I mean,
absolutely.
Great goalies, yeah.
Robin Leonard, though, I think, is just someone who positionally and his athleticism, again, I think he's one of my favorite goalies to watch right now. Pavlik's got great athleticism, too, mm-hmm. I think. But Pavlik is, let's be honest, guys, he's struggled with his conditioning issues. But, again, I think this year, on this road trip, guys, I got to go back to how he's played on this road trip. Pavlik has been excellent, and sure, he's had his ups and downs this year, but I think overall he's been, if I had to give him a grade, I'd give him something like an 8 out of 10 this year.
Pittsburgh Penguins, Marc-Andre Fleury.
Well, I mean, he's just, you know, he's a little bit lost still, even, and the playoffs have been terrible the past couple times around, but we're looking at the, you know, age-wise, it's not that old.
Sure. He's been around
track
forever.
Track record of winning a Stanley Cup, playing quite well. He's put up good numbers, obviously, in a team that isn't the best defensively, but can just carry the puck all the time. I still have Pittsburgh ahead of Winnipeg, but it's not the gap it was 3 years ago.
Absolutely, and Marc-Andre Fleury, as you mentioned, Richie, he's been better during the regular season. You got to give him props for that, because the last couple of years in the playoffs, he's really struggled with his confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think there's no issue there with the quality of him as a goaltender. I mean, the guy, we mentioned first overall
physical
pick,
skills, yeah.
The guy's got mental, the physical skills. Mental. It's inside of him. Yeah. And if he can put it together and give, and you hear this a lot, it might be a cliche, but if he gives the Pittsburgh Penguins a chance to win, which he's done in the past, he's got a cup ring.
If he doesn't this year, he's done.
Right, but I'm saying
Pittsburgh,
if they
I think.
Do, I think Pittsburgh's, I picked them to win the cup at the beginning of the year. Yeah. If they get the defense and the goaltending,
no,
we know
that.
The offense is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Malkin, Crosby, check them off, first and second best player in the NHL.
Yeah.
So if they get that, look out for the Pittsburgh Penguins, because in previous years, we've seen the Islanders give them some problems last year. The Islanders might not even make the playoffs. But in goal, if you're solid in goal, and Marc-Andre Fleury has been for years and years and years, it's just the last couple of years he struggled, then I think, the Penguins are a contender. So I'll give the edge to the Penguins, but I think Pavlik is not that far behind Fleury as far as skill-wise goes.
Last three teams, the San Jose Sharks, the St. Louis Blues, and the Vancouver Canucks.
No question. That's an easy one. Luongo's way better. San Jose, I mean, Niemi, I think is better. He's had the benefit of playing for Chicago and San Jose, two great teams for the course of his career. But he's really established himself as a really strong netminder. I think he's ahead. San Jose as a whole is ahead. And I think St. Louis, with their depth in the system, and I think with Halak's performance taking the Habs to the conference finals a couple of years back, I have them both. I have them all three ahead.
Yeah, St. Louis, you can make a strong argument. They're one of the top teams as far as their depth goes. Elliott or Halak, you can really... Hitchcock has the ability, and Hitchcock has done this
and
for
Jake
years.
And Jake Allen, too.
Jake Allen is a guy. Yeah. He was on the Canadian junior team. I sometimes get all these guys confused. Jake Allen is a guy that, you know, I can see them making a move, and we've talked about this with Jeremy Rutherford, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who we've had on many times. You're probably going to make a move there because, you know, Jake Allen is probably your backup, and Halak is probably the guy I'd lean towards moving forward, taking them into the playoffs. I think he's the better goalie.
Last question, the overall rank for the Winnipeg Jets goaltenders in the 30-team NHL.
23, 24, one of the two.
Yeah, and I go back to, you know, Justin Goldman had Pavlik at 21. As far as organizationally, I'll say that they're... I'll give them 20th out of 30 teams organizationally for the Jets.
So bottom third in terms of the entire NHL.
Bottom third, but top of the bottom third.
Yeah, but you know, when you're looking at bottom...
Damning by faint praise right there.
Well, I mean, it's not like they're 27th. I'm saying they're 20th.
Yeah, and I think when you know that the point of the exercise as a whole was to look at the forwards, the defensemen, the goaltending. And if you're going to have the forwards in the bottom third, you're going to have the goaltending in the bottom third, and the defensemen... In the second of the three, between 10 and 20,
you have to pull
back your expectations for the squad, don't you?
Richie, I got to say this too. With Andrei Pavlik, I think if he plays a little bit better earlier on the season, because I think Montoya has been excellent. I think Montoya has shown he's got a shutout. Yeah. He's been good this year. His numbers are good. So if you want to go by numbers, whatever you want to go by. I think he's done a good job when he's been called upon. I think you might have the Jets a little bit higher. I might even put them as high as 17, 18 in the NHL.
And I'll tell you, if the defense is better, then the goaltending would be better.
Yeah, they sort of do work hand-in-hand in that case. We are down at the St. Vitale Centre Food Hall. We're here in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. Come on down. Drop off your new unwrapped toys. We accept cash and credit and debit donations as well.
Where's that debit card, by the way, Drew? I don't see... Or sorry, that debit machine, I don't see it anywhere.
It's down at the other end.
Oh, it's at the other end.
Go visit our friends at Bob or Virgin 103, and they'll take care of your credit, debit, and cash donations. There's a bunch of great raffles you get to enter when you make a donation. Yes. And, of course, there's also a silent auction going on for an entire Winnipeg Jets jersey, a beautiful Jets jersey, signed entirely by the team. So get your bids in on that jersey. Of course, that's a great gift for the Winnipeg Jets fan in your family.
Drew, as far as the silent auction, how are people going to know about it if it's silent?
Saw that joke coming from a mile away.
Can we put your mic silent?
Yeah, let's put all our mics on silent and go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 25 minutes before the top of the hour, where Hustler and Lawless, minus Hustler, who's still in Florida. Lucky guy.
Tough life for Huss.
Yeah, going to be at the Jets Lightning game tonight. I guess it's Leibel and Lawless then tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, L&L.
Yeah, I have to say, Matt Leibel, I was on with him hosting the drive, the warm-up. The drive home, which show.
That's Dave Naylor's show, but close enough.
Yeah, that's called the drive, Drew. Yeah.
Right.
Matty's really matured since his bar mitzvah.
No, I have to say, you know, hosting that show on his own, he's sounding great. He is prime for another show.
You're offering him one?
I don't have any airtime. But
I think what I'd say is Matty's an emerging superstar of TSN 1290. Yeah. I think Remus has jumped the shark.
Remus dropped the shark long ago.
Libel is the new up-and-comer. Remus is, yesterday's news, Rich.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know why you brought him up.
Anyways, we're live here at St. Vitale Center, the food hall. We are here in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. Drop off your new unwrapped toys. If you want to make a cash donation, we're always happy to accept that. There's some great prizes available to anybody who is... generously willing to contribute to this fine event, all in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. Let's head to NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
There we go. NHL news and notes for this Sunday. Saturday. What are we talking about? Sunday.
True, you said night. You said Sunday.
I know. You know what? I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself.
Are you a little tired now after that turkey sandwich? Yeah, you need down during the commercial break?
Yeah, well, I'm surprised Drew can talk. He just swallowed that thing like a duck. He didn't even chew it.
Peter Laviolette reportedly next in line to coach the New York Islanders if the Islanders' struggles continue and they dismiss Jack Capuano as head coach. You know, your thoughts on Laviolette as the potential head coach on Long Island? Is he the guy to, you know, get more out of what seems to be a sort of an underachieving Islanders team so far this year?
I mean, Chris Stevenson of the Ottawa Sun was speculating also that Guy Boucher may be in line for that gig. I think if you want to fire Jack Capuano, if you're Gar Snow, you might want to maybe get more than two NHL defenders or three or four, and you may want to get an NHL goaltender to give him a fair shot at actually having the job. I always love when GMs fire the coach, don't give them enough defensemen, don't get enough goaltending, and say, the team's not performing. Well, I wonder why.
We've talked about it quite a bit, Richie, about the Islanders right now. They are struggling big time in net. And you look at the Islanders and what the expectations were this year. Mark Streit is not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And you look at other guys, and Kyle Okposo has been excellent. Franz Nielsen is excellent. John Tavares is going to be excellent every year because he's a top 10 player in the NHL. But you look at the defense, and you have guys like Matt Karkner and others that just they don't fit in on defense there. Mm-hmm. And so Jack Capuano is absolutely on the hot seat. And right now, in a weak metropolitan division, the Islanders are at the bottom of it. And they're struggling to get higher up in the standings. And so back to Peter Laviolette, though. You remember he started his career there. And, you know, he's been an excellent head coach for a lot of teams. And I thought, you know, he was let go a little bit early by Philly. But as you know, Paul Holmgren, you know, is the type of guy that he'll snap his fingers and make a move.
You just heard Marty Baron talk about Paul Holmgren last hour.
You know, Peter Laviolette, he's absolutely qualified to be the coach.
But why would Capuano lose his job? Why would Capuano lose his job? You haven't given him a top netminder or defenseman.
I agree with you, Richie. But
so
as Gar
Snow, you go trade two prospects. Trade two draft picks and Thomas Vanek. Matt Molson, Tavares' best buddy and line mate.
Yep.
For a pending UFA, which Molson is, for Vanek, like what? You make a terrible trade like that. You don't address. You use an asset to not address the defense or goaltending issues. That's clearly misinterpreting what your team need is, which I'm sure most people could have told you anyways, and then you're going to fire the coach because the job isn't getting done? Take some responsibility.
By the way, we don't know if a firing is imminent.
Even so, but
I don't disagree with you, Richie.
Come out and say, hey, I know what we need. We need some help here. Right. I'm going to try and get it for the squad.
Right.
His job isn't in question.
I don't disagree with you, but at the end of the day, it is results-oriented. So.
Well, then why does Garth Snow have a job then?
He could be gone. Hey, Garth Snow's job might be on the
line.
No,
it's not, apparently. Charles Wong and him are buds.
Vancouver Canucks forward Alex Burrows has broken his jaw. He's out indefinitely for the Canucks. What impact is that going to have on the team from the left coast of Canada?
That's a big impact, Drew, because they don't have enough depth. Like, and they just don't have enough talent there. And what you're seeing is John Tortorella is working hard with this team. Burrows has become one of his guys, as he mentioned. You know, he plays hard, plays in all situations, and they have Sadin Kessler, and they're riding them hard like he does, and he has his players in good shape. And that was an issue in New York, as Marty Baron also said in the second hour. But I mean, when you're Vancouver, you don't really have any kind of secondary scoring. A guy like Alex Burrows is huge. Big injury.
He's got zero goals this year, and the fact is he's only played 17 games. One of the reasons why I think that he is probably this is really bad news is because I have him on my hockey pool team, and he hasn't been very good, and he only has 3 points. But no, I mean, Alex Burrows has struggled big time, and Richie mentioned, you know, the Sedins and Kessler. Ryan Kessler's been absolutely fantastic this year. He's been doing a great job, 15 goals. You know, he's got to be pumped up to go back to the Olympics and play for Team USA. But Richie nailed it. We've talked to Ben Kuzma about this as recently as a week ago. By the way, I hope that they're not announcing right now that Drew's car's being towed. But, you know, Alex Burrows has been a disappointment this year, but they'll still miss him because of the fact that they have this lack of depth. And a guy like Zach Cassian, he's not going to be able to replace that. A guy like Yannick Hansen will have to step up. But the Vancouver Canucks are having big-time troubles right now with secondary scoring.
Staying with Vancouver, they suffered an injury on the defense, and this one is a pretty significant one, depending on how long he's out for. They're going to be without Alex Edler. It's indefinitely, and they haven't really announced what the injury is, so it's sort of shrouded in some mystery there in Vancouver.
Well, it's either upper body or lower body.
It might be mid-body.
or could be big body.
And it could go from upper to lower depending on if he raises his hands or drops his hands.
That's right.
But, you know, that's a big loss on the Canucks' back end. He's been a real, even though he's been, you know, Tortorella's been sort of giving him the gears the last little while and been criticizing his play, he's a minutes eater for the Canucks on the back end.
Yeah, huge injury. I mean, he's two-way defenseman. He's probably your best. Garrison gives it back a little bit in the back end. Right, and we know that BX obviously had an argument about that, and Ham, who's still more defensively oriented than offensive. Edler's a guy you're going to count on for both, and it's huge. Who's going to fill those minutes?
Yeah, and you can fill those minutes. The Vancouver
physical
Canucks,
too.
Vancouver Canucks are going to have to step up as a group, and you know Richie mentioned Kevin Bieksa, I really like, and Jason Garrison's been better offensively this year. A guy they brought in and struggled last year, but the Vancouver Canucks guys are in a dogfight. They're not. This isn't the big bad Vancouver Canucks who are going to coast to winning the division anymore.
Exactly.
This is a team that's in a dogfight to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. You're talking about the Vancouver Canucks in ninth place right now, so you're fighting teams like the Phoenix Coyotes for that eighth spot, right? So, I mean, this is a team that's going to have to pick it up. You know, if you want a true test of what this team is all about, because I think we've agreed, this team is no longer a Stanley Cup contender unless they make
that's
a move.
Right. Totally
unless
agree.
You bring in somebody else, Richie, because the Sedins and Kessler, they can't just three guys just can't win in the NHL anymore. You got to have four lines out there. So they got to bring somebody in. So when you talk about Edler and Burrows, these are key cogs
that brought
you to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Bruins a couple of years ago, 3 years ago.
Windows closing there.
It's huge, and it's unfortunate, but hopefully other guys, depth players, can step up in their absence.
If they traded Schneider earlier, they might have a guy who's ready. Bo Horvat's not ready yet, no fault of his own.
Right.
But the problem is that are those windows not going to interact at the same point? Meaning
the window will close when Horvat comes in.
Yeah, well, meaning exactly. Sedin and those guys are too old when Horvat comes in and is ready to play. Whereas, you know, with San Jose, for example, and you can put in Hertl, right?
Yep.
You can put in some of the young players, and the older guys still aren't completely done. They have a lot to offer.
It was a transition, a seamless transition, as opposed to sort of a gap between the different eras.
I mean, it for sure will happen, but it certainly is a possibility.
The last note for news and notes, Markham, Ontario, the city council there, the town council, voted against providing public funding to the proposed NHL-sized arena that was going
to be
built.
Maybe they want to get a team first.
Well, nothing about that plan in Markham made any sense.
Yeah, no, it made no sense.
And so, I mean, for once, I think when it comes to NHL arenas and city councils, small town city councils, as we saw in Glendale for so often, I guess they made a decision that was proper for the citizens of Markham in not going ahead with this arena proposal.
And you've seen how it is. Unless you go at it with Gary Bettman, then Gary Bettman isn't on board.
Right. And guys, I got to be honest. I haven't been following this as much as in recent years, speaking of the arena in Markham. But as we've talked about,
there is no arena, don't worry.
Now in the NHL, though, you have, for the first time with the Phoenix situation, the Florida situation, Buffalo, you don't have very many teams that have ownership issues, right? So it really doesn't matter. I don't think anybody's expecting NHL expansion for three, four, five years?
I mean, if they like their cash, these owners.
Right, but I'm just saying.
If I see another two teams in this league, my God. I mean, how many of these teams come in Nashville? You're like, where are the players?
You don't want 36 teams? Put one in.
32 teams would be awful.
Las Vegas? What about a team in Saskatoon, Richie?
Who cares the location? There's not enough players.
Let's put a team in Saskatoon. I want to see a team in St. John's.
I got to see any more teams
NHL
like Calgary. Kidding me? AHL prices? They should bring two expansion teams in and charge AHL prices for 10 years. To those two games.
I think that might be a good plan. It doesn't have a chance in hell.
No.
But it's a nice idea anyways. Three goals in a minute and 2 seconds for the Dallas Stars. They lead the Philadelphia Flyers 4-1 in afternoon NHL action. So for Jets fans, the Philadelphia Flyers are not doing us a favor. They're losing to the Dallas Stars.
Sagan is getting going. Sagan came back from a concussion, Drew.
Yeah.
And he said he was pointing to this game to get going, and boy, was that right.
Yeah, that's a talented player right there. Let's go to break. When we come back, it's one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. We are live at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. We're here in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. It's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive live on TSN 1290. One final segment for this Saturday afternoon before we turn things over to Leibel and Lawless, who are going to be hosting H&L, taking you up to Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour prior to the Jets and the Lightning tonight from Tampa Bay. It's called Rapid Fire. Let's do it.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for this Saturday afternoon. Reports from TSN's Pierre LeBrun have the Colorado Avalanche shopping forward Jamie McGinn on the trade market. The former second-round draft pick of the Sharks was acquired by the Avalanche 3 years ago and has put up 8 points in 23 games this season. Recently, McGinn was criticized by Avs head coach Patrick Waugh, who said, "I expect more from him. Jamie needs to be better offensively, play with more grit in front of the net. He needs to be more physical. He needs to be better defensively." What is Jamie McGinn worth on the trade market?
What is Jamie McGinn worth? Jamie McGinn is probably worth a... I was thinking about this, Drew, before the show and when you sent out the show plan. It's probably a third or second round pick that he's worth. It really depends. You know, the trade deadline, teams get desperate, and what they want to do is add a guy who can play third line and left wing and all that stuff. So they might get a second round pick out of a really good team that'll be a low second rounder. You're not going to get a high second rounder from him, because the reality is he's probably going to a team, he's younger, he's still, you know, mid-20s, but the idea is probably gotten a guy, bigger guy you want to add for the playoff push. So I'd say you're talking high third, low second.
Yeah, he's 25 years old, Richie Jamie McGinn, and he's got a bit of a scoring touch, but I think, as you mentioned, he's more suited to a third line role and a bottom six forward. He's a guy that, you know, an energy guy. And as I mentioned, he's had certain varying degrees of success with the Sharks, with the Avalanche scoring. Again, we've seen this, Richie, with Steve Downey. I mean, this team, this group, they were, by the way, when Steve Downey was moved, the team was hot as coal, whatever you want to say. this team, as I mentioned, I picked them to make the playoffs before the season started, and I still think I'm not going to switch that at all.
Obviously.
So if they don't like Jamie McGinn's work ethic or what he brings, they're not afraid to move him for a draft pick or maybe a similar bottom six forward.
Sometimes there's value to be had in teams that bring in new coaches, because new coaches just don't like certain players and do like certain players.
Right.
You know, somebody else's trash might be somebody else's treasure. And maybe if the Avs don't value him that highly, another team can add him in there for a high third, low second, and he can be a valuable component to the roster.
Yeah. And the other day I was looking through trash and actually found a gold watch. So you can find treasure in the garbage.
On Tuesday night, the Washington Capitals sleptwalked through a 4-1 defeat at the hands of the Carolina Hurricanes. After the game, Caps defenseman Mike Green said, "Someone needed to get in a fight or throw a big check that maybe would have turned the momentum around." In response to Mike Green's comments, Washington Capitals head coach Adam Oates said, "Why didn't he do it? Talk is cheap." This isn't the first time the Capitals defenseman and head coach have had a public disagreement, as they had one earlier this week, just prior to this incident. Mike Green will be an unrestricted free agent after next season. Of Oates or Green, who will be the last man standing in Washington?
Oates will be the last man standing. Green doesn't defend well enough to play top pairing defense in the National Hockey League. If he's protected, he can play top power play, second unit. He can skate. He's poor in his own zone. But this team as a whole is, you know, there are a bunch of Mike Greens. Talent, I think a lack of competitiveness. And there's a lack of heart in this squad. They want their points. They want the glory. But when the games get tough, this team will crumble. And it's a fundamental problem that George McPhee, who's been there for 20 years now, hasn't addressed. It's gotten worse, I'd say, over the past few years. So I watch Adam Oates look at this. And when they came into town, I've watched them since. No structure. They get by on skill. Like, if this team didn't have skill, they might win 5 games all year. That's the way they play. And I realize they might play that way because of this skill, but there's nothing here that tells me they're going to beat any good teams.
Right, and this team right now is in 8th place in the East. They're competing with the Rangers and the Flyers right now in a weaker Eastern Conference right now, and they're in a dogfight. And there are a lot of problems here because you've got Alexander Ovechkin, Backstrom. You've got a lot of talented players, but this team, as a team, is not very hard to play against. Okay. And, you know, sure, they've had varying degrees of success. But, you know, Mike Green's coming out and saying that. Does he factor into the long-term plans of the Washington Capitals? I don't know. You look at his goal totals over the last couple of years. They're going down and down and down. He scored 30 goals 3 or 4 years ago, Richie. I mean, is that...
Injuries have taken a toll on him, too.
Is he the same Mike Green? I'd probably argue he isn't. No. So, you know, that's a very frustrated player, in my opinion.
last point on Rapid Fire, last question on Rapid Fire, and we'll open it up to our colleague Matty Leibel, who's joined us here at St. Patel Center Food Hall.
Got an amazing spot in the parking lot. You know, you pull in and someone's pulling out.
Yeah. Oh, you got a good one.
Oh, yeah. I circled like four or five times, Costanza style, just waiting for someone to be on their way.
It's all about the spot. Drew was actually parked 8 blocks down.
He's been towed.
Yeah, he's been towed. His car's gone.
Yeah, your lazy,
my car is gone.
Your laziness is an example for the rest of us to follow. On Friday afternoon, the Nashville Predators charter flight was forced to return to Nashville International Airport just after getting airborne. Fortunately, the problem with the airplane was a minor one. The plane happened to hit a hawk on takeoff. The hawk is, of course, a predatory bird, making this a predator-on-predator crime. In honor of the Nashville Predators...
Who writes this stuff?
Who is your favorite...
Yeah, I know who writes it.
Unfortunately, Drew.
Who is your favorite player that was selected by the Predators in the 1998 NHL expansion draft?
Well, you know, as he went out last night and had a rough, rough night. And so what's happening now is I'm going to talk and fill the airtime because this question is only targeted for Ezzy.
Yeah.
But Ezzy had a rough night, and while he usually comes on the show in the morning, he says, I was up, I was went to bed early, I was preparing.
Got a little Chinese food, ordered for one.
Yeah, he had a Christmas party, and he was partying a little too much. He needed a ride this morning, so he has no answer for this. So I'm going to keep talking while Ezra prepares the list, and here we go.
David Legwon.
David Legwon in the expansion draft?
Not in the
entry draft.
Oh, entry draft.
He's not even, is he still, yeah, he's still there.
But this is the expansion draft I'm talking about.
Why is this question being asked?
Well, I honestly think it's John Slaney, the guy who scored the World Junior Championship goal in Saskatoon in 91, I believe, and was a great offensive defenseman in the AHL for many years. Unfortunately, you hadn't prepared for this segment, and thus you don't get an answer.
Did they take Uwe Krupp?
They took Uwe Krupp from
Uwe Krupp! Doesn't he have a Stanley Cup final goal? A game-winning goal?
96 in game four.
A finals-winning goal.
96 game four.
On John Van Biesbrick? Oh, you got to take the Krupster.
Single overtime or double overtime? Wasn't it a 1-0 game?
It was triple overtime. Yeah.
Well, was it scoreless at that point?
Yep.
I'll take Krupp.
Uwe Krupp and Ezzy, do you have an answer yet? Have we stalled long enough?
Well, here, let's
no,
let me bring it up here.
They didn't take Shea Weber either.
Yeah, Ez.
Oh, there we go. It's tough to go against Uwe Krupp. I'll go with Uwe Krupp.
Uwe Krupp is actually signed, so both of you are wrong. He wasn't taken in the expansion draft.
It's on the list.
Well,
Drew,
you
showed me.
He was taken.
I'm not sure. I don't think he was.
That was 16 years ago.
Are you doubting Wikipedia?
Yeah, I'm doubting Wikipedia.
He was taken from the Avalanche.
I believe he was signed in the offseason. In any event.
Contention. A bone of contention.
We're going to have a great show with Lawless.
I'll jeer Drew's rapid-fire questions.
Brian Munns and Gary Lawless and Matthew Leibel coming up next here at the St. Patel Center Food Hall.
Good show, boys.
In support of the Christmas Cheerboard, it's the Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. A big thank you to our sponsors here. That would be Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, The Chill Bar and Grill, Linden Market Dental Center, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. Big thank you to our sponsors here for the Christmas Miracle, St. Patel Center, Super Lube Auto Centers, Gino's Homes, Winnipeg's Volkswagen Dealers, TD Canada Trust, Kern Hill Furniture, and Tim Hortons for, of course, feeding us and keeping us fueled with coffee for the last couple days. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for producer Tim back at the studio, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stay tuned for Hustler and Libel with Brian Munns. Thanks for listening. Happy holidays, everybody. Have yourself a great weekend. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.